and they worked like a charm. I know that each individual antenna going from a isotropic source into the antenna, 2D squared of a lambda, would be less than 3 feet. I think it's around 1.5 feet. So I'm already on the safe side when I'm at 3 feet between the two. I know that at 915 megacycles, free space loss is exactly 30.9 dB. So I get 30.9 dB of isotropic to isotropic loss at 3 feet at 915 megacycles. First antenna has got 6 dB of gain. Second antenna has got 6 dB of gain. Subtract 12 dB from the 30.9, and I get something like, I think it's 18.9. Yes. Or is it 18.4? In other words, the insertion loss between the two antennas is 18 and a fraction dB when I do it that way. And the mathematics turns out beautifully. I'm in more than the far field from one antenna if the other antenna is isotropic. But because my sampling antenna is better than isotropic and happens to be identical, they are beautiful collimators to each other. Therefore, the decibels of free space and the decibels of gain add beautifully. I'm not getting 22.5 degrees of phase shift across the aperture. They're being fed as if the signal was almost coming from infinity. It's close enough to ideal. It makes a very convenient antenna range. I wonder if you can see that picture. It's of A2SAY, K2LAW.
No, I'm still a little bit confused here. The obvious way to solve the problem is to make sure that you're not in the near field of either of the antennas. In other words, double the near field distance if the antennas are identical, and then you should be safe. But I don't know if that's correct or not. So I don't think you've solved that problem for me.
Okay, let me repeat it again. A three-element Yagi at 915 megacycles has a near field range of 1.5 feet. I've got a pair of them looking at each other, and I've got them 3 feet apart. So I'm doubling the distance of either one. Therefore, I am, without a doubt, when you take the near field range of either antenna and add them together, you can't be wrong. You're conservative. All I'm telling you is that if the antennas are identical and they're acting as collimators to each other, you could, in a pinch, move them closer together, and it doesn't explode, and it doesn't catch on fire, and nothing bad happens. So to be conservative, take the near field range of each antenna and add them and make that the range. That's always correct. But in the real world, when they start acting as collimators, you could be closer, and nothing bad's going to happen. Does that make more sense? From A2SAY, K2LIW.
WA2SAY, yes, it makes a lot of sense, and that's basically what I have always done. I have always added the near fields together and said it's got to be at least that distance apart, and that's the safe way to do it, and it seems that you agree with me, so it all makes a lot of sense. Very good. All right, I just wanted to clarify that. It's always been something that's kind of in the edge of my mind I always wondered about, and I always said, well, be on the safe side, we'll add them together, and that way we know we're in good shape. So I'm glad you confirmed that for me. WA2SAY, back to that.
Dick, I would need from you to explain more about S22, because S11, if I'm measuring the antenna, I have the generator connected to one port, receiver connected to the second port, all the directional coupler. The input of the directional coupler is connected to the antenna. Now, could you picture for me S22?
There is no such thing as S22 to any reasonable antenna that you and I are likely to use. An antenna can have an S11, which means I'm putting a signal into port number one, I'm taking the reflected signal off of port number one. But your antenna only has one port. There isn't a second port of the antenna. You may measure some kind of S22 of some other two-port device, like an amplifier, but an antenna does not have an S22. Over to you, Wes.
But by means that I'm creating S11 is is that I'm connecting generator to one port of the directional coupler, which is the coupling port. Now, I'm sending the signal to the output of the directional coupler, where I have my receiver.
As I said before, I'm not as familiar with the earlier types of vector network analyzer, which give you a reference, an A, a B, and a port 1, and a port 2.
You don't have to be. You don't have to be. The vector network analyzer, the network analyzer is only the generator, and on the other side you can put voltmeter. That's it. That's your vector analyzer. Now, you still have a two port. No matter what you say and what you do, you take a Rosenquist, which has everything inside. It's the same concept, end to exam.
There's a much more important factor that we should be discussing here, Wes, and that is when you hooked up your directional coupler, as you did, to your vector network analyzer, and you measured the S11 of your antenna, and now you told me you did it across various ham bands, I've got a problem. And that is, every realistic directional coupler I have ever used changes at least two things as I sweep in frequency. The coupling coefficient goes up and down. It might be rated at minus 10 decibels at the center of its frequency range. At the edges, second of all, its directivity is not going to be ideal across all of those frequencies. So every real directional coupler, particularly if I'm going multiple octaves, I'm going through a whole lot of octaves if I go from 80 meters to 10 meters. That's a 10-to-1 frequency range. That's 2.5 octaves, I think it is. Anyhow, no directional coupler, with rare exception, has good characteristics of coupling coefficient and directivity across that frequency. Therefore, in order for you to know whether or not what you're reading on the screen has any reality to it, you have to put a 50-ohm known good termination on the port that's going to the antenna. That's the calibration procedure. Does the network analyzer, across all of those frequencies you care about, does it measure, let me pick a number, minus 30 decibels of S11 apparent when you put your known good dummy load on the output connector that's going to go to the antenna? The next test is to put a perfect short circuit or a perfect open circuit. If everything is really correct, if you've gone through the correct calibration procedure, and maybe yours...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
And maybe your network analyzer has a calibration procedure where it remembers all this, but every reasonable network analyzer, in the calibration mode, you must put a short circuit, an open circuit, and a known good termination, and sweep across all of the frequencies of interest, and record all of that data. And when you finally record that data, play it back through the right calibration correction procedure program, if there's one there, when you do that, and you finally go back and you do the test again, and you put on the known good termination, do you measure minus 30 or minus 40 dB of S11 of your known good termination across all of that frequency? If you don't get a good reading on a known good termination, if you don't get that, then whatever you read on the antenna is contaminated data. Until you do some kind of a correction, it's not telling you the truth. I wonder if that makes some sense. N2XJN, K2RIW.
N2XJN. Yes, I did that. I put 50-ohm resistor. I was looking at what I see on the Smith chart and on the polar, although in polar I didn't see impedance, on Smith chart I saw everything that I needed. Now, I remember your words. You said, okay, you have a directional coupler that works on gigahertz. In the lower frequency, it's going to work better. And in very low frequency, it's going to work even better. But because I was so confused, then there is a time right now to go to question number 3. because this test raised so much confusion in regards to different names and descriptors of the coupler in general. And here you have a pictures and the names of the devices that I have, but when you go to the last one, you see variable RF bridge. And then before the last one is the Wiltron SWR auto tester from 2 GHz to 12 GHz. Now, if that's what you're saying is that you, what I should understand, those are directional couplers. But what is the distinction between all of them? So let's go through that list.
And we've got to back up. I may have led you astray. What I should have said is that a directional coupler used at lower frequencies than the rated frequency has a beautiful, predictable performance. If my directional coupler, I happen to own one that's rated from 8 to 12 gigahertz, and it's a 10 decibel coupler. At 8 to 12 gigahertz, it's reasonably flat across that region. It has reasonable directivity, probably 20 decibels of directivity. 10 dB of coupling, 8 to 10 gigs. I can use it at much lower frequencies. I can go down to 1 gig. I can go down to 0.1 gig, 100 megacycles. And it's still a good directional coupler in directivity. But the coupling coefficient is becoming a much bigger number. If it's a 10 dB coupler at 10 gigs, at 100 megs, maybe it's a 40 decibel coupler. I can tell you the mathematics of that. It's a very predictable mathematics. As you go down in frequency, the coupling coefficient becomes a smaller and smaller number, bigger and bigger negative dBs, in a very predictable manner. And it falls off exactly 6 dB per octave when you get far away from the design frequency. So it's not a flat device. It's a very predictable device. With proper calibration, it'll give you all the accuracy you want. But to say that it works better at lower frequencies, you've got to be careful how you use the word better. To a person who expects a 10 dB coupler to always be a 10 dB coupler, and at 100 megs it's a 40 dB coupler, he might say, that's terrible. A smarter guy will say, I know exactly what that's doing, and I can use that number. I wonder if I made that clear the first time, Wes. N2F.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
N2XJN, K2RIW.
N2XJN, yes. Yes, you did make. I wonder how can I measure the direction coupler with my network analyzer. I have a two port, so let's say I connect the coupling port to the generator, and then I have two remaining receiver ports, A and B. So then I connect a port to the output, and then connect the then connect the B port to input. I'm confused.
When you're measuring coupling coefficient, you're really measuring gain. The input connector to the port, input connector, the port of the directional coupler that's labeled as input, that is port number one. When you're measuring the coupling coefficient, the coupled port, the output port must go to a 50-ohm termination. I've heard you a couple of times say a 50-ohm resistor. That scares me a little bit.
Termination, yeah, I use it. Okay, fine. I'm sorry.
All right, glad to hear that it's really a 50-ohm termination, not just a 50-ohm resistor hanging with its leads there, because that can be a little confusing. So, a 50-ohm termination is on the output port of the directional coupler. Input port is going to be the source of signal. The output port for your network analyzer is the coupled port. Now, as you sweep in frequency, the S21, if you're set up for an S21 measurement, that is coupling coefficient. If S21 was minus 10 dB, that would represent 10 dB of coupling. That would be measuring forward coupling coefficient. If you now reverse the input port and the output port of your coupler, you're feeding the coupler backwards, but still use the coupled port as the output for your network analyzer. Now you're measuring reverse isolation instead of coupling, and if you put the two graphs on top of each other, forward coupling coefficient and reverse isolation, the difference between the two in decibels is directivity. And you do want to know directivity, because if the directivity at some particular frequency was not very good, and if your antenna had a particular standing wave ratio that you wanted to measure, and you think you're looking at the reflected power from the antenna by way of the directional coupler, but because the coupler has poor directivity, it is by mistake also sampling some of the forward power, then your data is going to be pretty contaminated. So you do want to know swept coupling coefficient. That's using the coupler in the forward mode.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
You do want to measure the isolation. That's using the coupler in the reverse mode. And the difference between the two in decibels is directivity. You'd like the directivity to be at least 15 or 20 dB if you can get it. And more would be nice. N2XJN, K2LIW.
Thank you for all of this explanation. So now point number three. You have a number of pictures and names of different devices, which I would like to know, because there are plenty of them, just few words about each one. One of them, the point A, is being called three-branch splitter. Point B is being called a DC 7000 megahertz resistive power splitter. Then we have point C, resistive power divider for wave, DC to 2 gigahertz. Then we have the N directional coupler power splitter board band. Then we have a mini circuit power splitter. Then we have a coaxial power splitter combiner and hybrid coupler, quadrature coupler, and so on. So let's go.
Okay, I went to question number three. The very first website shows me DC to 7,000 megacycle resistive power splitter. Okay. I think I know what that is. Hewlett-Packard, among other companies, way back when, decided that the broadest technique you could get for power sampling is with a resistor network. The resistor network has got a lot of insertion loss, but it's very predictable. If I wanted to do a 2-to-1 power divide, if I want to take a signal generator and split it into two signals of equal power, a resistor divider can do that job very nicely. It can simultaneously meet the requirement of each output connector looks like 50 ohms as a source or as a load. The two output connectors in some cases can be isolated from each other, not always, but at least they're equal. The total insertion loss of the device from each input to each output might be 6 decibels or greater, but at least it gives you a balanced pair of signals, and certain kinds of testing, balanced signals are very nice. And for a device to be broadband from DC to 7,000 megacycles, that's a lot of actives. With resistors, you can do that. With coupling, you don't stand a chance. N2XJN, K2RAW.
Okay, beautiful. So this device has three ports, and I assume that this is port 1, 2, and I believe it's S, or maybe 3. I don't see that very well. So I'm feeding with the generator one port, and I'm getting two equal signals. Now, if I have then I can feed two different amplifiers or devices, and I mean, how do I apply that?
Okay. You're about to ask me what kind of a test requires a pair of equal amplitude signals across a very large frequency range. I can think of ways of doing that with some kind of kind of a canceling network, where I've carefully adjusted the phase length between two signal paths, and I want the two signal paths to arrive 180 degrees out of phase and cancel, and I want to know at what frequencies they cancel. There's a whole lot of tests where you want two equal power signals. Okay, here's the best one. Signal leveling. If I've got a signal generator that has an external leveling capability, and I put my output of the signal generator into the common port of that resistor divider, output port number one goes to my device being tested. Output port number two goes to a crystal detector. The crystal detector output, the video output, goes back to the signal generator as the leveling sampling signal. And what the signal generator will do is adjust its power up and down so that the sampling voltage coming from the crystal detector stays the same. So now that resistor divider, used as an external leveling circuit, means that my signal generator will now be applying the exact same amount of power to my device on the test, even though I'm sweeping over a very large frequency range. That's one of the places where they use that. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
Okay. Now you have C as JFW50PD-018, resistive power divider, four-way, DC to 2 gigahertz.
I'm looking at that picture right now, and that does the same thing. The common input connector, which is probably the connector on the left-hand side, has four output connectors. It probably has 10 dB of loss to each of those output connectors, or something like that. But at least the four output connectors will all get equal power.
So what is the difference between divider and splitter?
Vocabulary. The exact same function. One of them has two outputs, one of them has four outputs. The four output, we call it a splitter. It's a four-way power divider. Go ahead.
N, then would be the N connector. Directional coupler, power splitter, board, band. It does have something strange in it. Three ports with the red caps on it, and fourth one, which is not a port. When you go to the side, you're going to see probably lower pictures, which shows that the fourth pin, something that is extending from it, is just a cylinder. Back to you.
Okay, I see it's $39. Mecca is a good company. I've bought lots of stuff from them over the years. Type N directional coupler, power splitter broadband.
And then the pictures underneath from the left-hand side, 1, 2, 3, 4. Click on the 4 picture, and then you see vertical that it does have a 3 ports, but fourth one is just a pin, metal pin.
It looks like a metal pin. That is a 50-ohm internal termination. Go ahead.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, now, a few words about it. Power splitter.
Okay. Do they tell us coupling coefficient on this thing?
No.
Did they give us a Mecca part number?
No.
I'm looking at the picture and I see a part number on that front cover.
Oh, okay.
You go to the Mecca catalog and it'll tell you exactly what that is. If it is truly a directional coupler power splitter broadband, if it really is a power splitter, many times that's a fancy set of words for a 3 dB directional coupler. No. If that's true, would it still have a termination? Yes, it could. There's a slim chance this is a 3 decibel directional coupler, which means it might really be a quadrature hybrid. All directional couplers, by the way, the directional port, the coupled port, is close to 0 degrees of phase shift, and the output port is close to 90 degrees of phase shift, opposite of common sense. The coupled port is 0 degrees, the straight through port is minus 90 degrees.
States for the quadrature hybrid coupler?
Yes. the words get very mixed up in this area. Is a quadrature hybrid a 3 dB directional coupler? The answer is yes. They're the exact same device. It's probably got two or three more names. So the words can be confusing. If they told you decibels of coupling coefficient, then you know what you're getting.
Okay, so now I see, you see on G, you see quadrature hybrid coupler, which has four BNC connectors, but on the point G, what we were talking about, we have a three-port and internal 50-ohm termination. So my understanding is that the only difference between those two is that the point G, which is the ANSAC JH6-4 from 2 to 32 megahertz, doesn't have a 50-ohm internal load.
Yeah, I'm looking at the front panel on that thing, where they got A's and B's, and each of those numbers look like phase shift in degrees, 150 or 90. It looks like phase shift in degrees. I am guessing that inside of that machine there is a transformer. To cover 2 to 32 megacycles, you almost couldn't do that with a directional coupler. There's a transformer in there hooked up as a hybrid coupler, and you're about to ask, what does it really do? And I'm not sure.
Okay, that's a good answer. Now, we have a E, we skipped E, lab power splitter. Okay, so we know what is the splitter. Another one is crusher power splitter combiner. How come you can split and combine? That's F.
Let's back up to the ANSAC. As I look at the front panel closer, I thought I was seeing 90s and 180s. I suddenly realize I'm seeing 90s, zeros, and ISO. So that's telling me that if I go into port B and come out of port A, those two ports are isolated from each other. So it's telling me which ports are isolated, which ports are 0 degrees, which ports are minus 90 degrees. That is a quadrature hybrid. That ANSAC thing is a quadrature hybrid, to my knowledge. Go ahead.
Is worth to buy it.
If you want a quadrature hybrid that operates from 2 to 32 megs, and you're willing to spend $75, I think that's a reasonable price.
What do I have? What would be the application for that?
Okay. If you had a pair of quadrature hybrids, and you had a pair of matched amplifiers, you could make a so-called balanced amplifier assembly. That would have perfect 50-ohm input from 2 to 30 megs, perfect 50-ohm output from 2 to 30 megs, and it would be displaying the gain of your matched amplifiers. If each amplifier had 20 dB of gain, the overall device would have 20 dB of gain, but it would have perfect 50-ohm input, perfect 50-ohm output, and twice the power output capability of one amplifier. That's a possible application. Go ahead.
Okay, and in terms of measurement, because what I'm doing is I'm basically analyzing things around me. Back to you.
As an analyzing device, I'm not sure how you would use it. There's various kinds of antennas where this thing could take one input, it gives you two outputs that are 90 degrees apart plus an isolated port. The two ports 90 degrees apart, plugged into the right kind of an antenna, will give you circular polarization. Back to you.
But my question was, how can you, in terms of the point F, mini circuit ZSC2-1, coaxial power splitter combiner, how can you have a splitter and combiner with three ports?
If I use it in the forward mode, I'm splitting one input to two outputs. If I use it in the reverse mode, I'm taking two outputs and combining them to a certain input. That's a combiner. Forward, it's a splitter. Reverse, it's a combiner. And so, is it a splitter or a combiner? The answer is yes.
Beautiful answer. Okay, now, we have a power divider splitter. My, the J, Elytra a power divider splitter. Now, again, divider and a splitter, but here's the catch. There is only one port. Why?
I'm guessing that that is a device that goes onto a printed circuit board.
That's the typical box. You go into the web page and you enlarge the picture. It's on it, 1 to 8 gigahertz, and it's the SN number MW, whatever. It looks like it, and it looks like it has an N connector on it.
I'm not sure if that's an N connector or an SMA connector, but I do see one input connector, and the output, I see on the second picture, there's a J1, J2, J3, and two of the output connectors, which are the kind that you clamp onto the package, those two other output connectors were not yet installed. This is a strip line device, the upper and lower ground plane of the two metal covers that you see, the upper and lower cover. One of the connectors installed, the other two connectors have not yet been installed.
So why did they sell it?
They didn't say it, but they really mean to sell it as is.
No, the manufacturer. Why the manufacturer sold one with not installed ports?
You're guessing that this is coming directly from the manufacturer. I think there's some other guy that's got these sitting on the shelf and he's trying to sell them.
Beautiful answer. I love it. Now, we have a K on Ritsu Wittron, which both of them joined, SWR auto tester, 2 to 12 gigahertz. Now, if you take a look at that link, and of course you compare to the link L, which is right below, the right below WBE, variable RF bridge, 1 to 500 megahertz, I have it, I bought it. This is the one I have purchased. Now, both of them, they have similarities, but the distinction between them is one has a NUPS, which one is in ohms, and PF, which I believe is power factor, and the other one does not have anything, just the connectors.
Okay, the SWR auto tester, 2 to 12 gigahertz. Boy, that's a wide frequency range, Wiltron. And it is a directional coupler, and it's set up in such a way that it's looking at reverse power, the power reflected from the device on the test. So you could say it is a standing wave ratio measurer, or it's an S11 measurer, is what I think it's saying. And it gives you a detected SWR output, so there's a built-in detector besides, so it gives you a video output, if I understand correctly.
Okay, so what is the physical difference between the directional coupler that I have used for my testing from mini circuits and this one?
This one has the diode detector built in. It does not give you an RF output, it gives you a video output. Go ahead.
How then it would look like on the Smith chart?
The way this thing is made, you could put a sweeping signal generator on the so-called RF input. You connect your device on the test to that left-hand connector, which looks like an APC3 connector. The video output you would send to an oscilloscope. Then the oscilloscope would be displaying standing wave ratio versus frequency. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the one on the left is APC7. And it is probably worth to try it, although it works with the so high frequency, 2 to 12, so if I follow what you say, I may not have a use of it. Thank you.
Okay, this thing has a rated performance from 2 to 12. You're sort of asking me, is it going to work below 2 gigahertz? I think the answer is yes, but it's going to have less and less sensitivity as you go down below 2 gigahertz. And we're assuming now that the crystal detector has enough capacitor bypass that you can go to the lower frequencies. Yeah, you can do that. I think you could use it at lower frequencies, but it's going to be less sensitive. Go ahead.
And to extend. Okay, point L. WBE, variable RF bridge, 1 to 500 megahertz. I have got one, this one, exactly this one. And then, what I've noticed, it does have a two knobs. One on the left-hand side is on. But what I have noticed that if I go below 70 ohm, I'm going probably to 55 ohm, something like that, because it allows me to tune that. On the right-hand side, I have a power factor. And I was able to connect my antenna the same, similar way, but I didn't really know what I'm doing. N2XG.
Yeah, this thing doesn't look like it is intended for a 50 ohm world. It looks like it's intended for a 75 ohm world.
But if I can turn the knob on left hand side to 50 something, at least I'm close.
You're guessing, and I don't know.
Okay, now, what is the PF? How it works and what it does?
Power factor is telling you what is the ratio between reactive impedance and resistive impedance. Plus one is a pure inductor. Minus one is a pure capacitor. Zero is a pure 50 ohm resistor. So power factor is telling you, you could call it the phase angle of the reflection. You could call it how reactive versus resistive is the load. There's various ways of looking at power factor. You like the power factor to be zero. Plus one and minus one are as bad as you can get. Go ahead.
Okay, now, how can then I make on left-hand side the BNC from 50 ohm to 75 ohm transition so I could use it for 50 ohm?
By using a quarter wavelength of cable that is the square root of 50 times 70, I'm going to guess it's around 60 ohms. If you had a quarter wavelength of 60 ohm cable, it would match 50 into 70 at one frequency. That's the problem. To make a broadband match from 50 to 70, that's not easy.
Inside.
Just, what'd you say?
What is the inside and left knob?
I don't know.
So I got to take it out and see if I can trim it, and then eventually measure what is the impedance and try to match it.
I think you're saying you already own this thing.
I do.
Yeah, the price is right, but I think you're going to have to study it, find out what the schematic diagram is, and figure out what it's doing and how to change it to make it into a 50 ohm device. That might be very possible once you know the schematic.
Okay, thank you very much. Point number four, what is the anti-resonance of the quartz? If you take a look at the manual of my network analyzer, you look at page 3-13, at chapter 3.2, which is being named measurement method example. You look at the point number 17, the ceramic oscillator resonance and anti-resonance point measurement. What is anti-resonance?
In the case of a quartz crystal, there is a parallel resonance mode and a series resonance mode. Usually, but not always, the series resonant mode is called resonant. The parallel resonant mode is called anti-resonant. Those two frequencies are very close, and I forget which one is higher than the other, but every crystal has a series resonant mode and a parallel resonant mode, two separate resonant frequencies. On one of those frequencies, it is a short circuit. That's the resonant mode. On the anti-resonant mode, it's an open circuit at the resonant frequency. Over to you.
Okay. Now, I have something that is a video. We don't have a time for it. But then in the second image that you've got right after that, you see ANZAC RB3-50 VSWR bridge. If you could, you see the picture on it and you have a link for it. If you could comment on that. Because this one looks like a resistive bridge. And it's a 4-port device. It's from 3 to 1500 megahertz, which is a beautiful thing. The price is scary, that's why I'm not buying it. And there is a schematic on it. And I believe this is very handy stuff, but I would love to hear your opinion.
I think you're talking now about item 5, the YouTube, Eden's Tesla.
Forget about this right now because we don't have a time for it right now. We have a few minutes left. I'm talking about the next email that I have sent you. Next email, forget about the video. It says Anzac RB350 VSWR Bridge. After the first long email, I have sent you two emails. So the second email is only about the bridge.
Okay, I'm looking at Anzac RB-3-50 Viswar Bridge. Is that the one?
That's correct.
And your question is?
My question is, it looks like a very handy stop. It is from 3 to 1500 megahertz. It has 4 ports. And it looks like a kind of resistive stuff. Back to you.
Okay. My understanding of what I'm looking at is I see a resistive divider on the input port. The unknown in the termination, if they were identical in impedance, then the output would go to zero. If the unknown and the termination differ in the resistive component or differ in the reactive component, then there will be an output signal. So it is a kind of a Wheatstone bridge, and as long as you have a way of putting variable resistors and variable reactances on the termination port, you can then find out what the unknown is by tuning it for a null. Over to you.
Okay, so this one could be very handy for the measurement of the impedance and to be applicated to my vector network analyzer. Is that correct?
I didn't say that this is easily compatible to a network analyzer.
Saying applicable.
I'm not saying it's applicable to a network analyzer. This is intended to be a signal generator on the input port, something like...
Thank you. KA21CB.
KA21CB and 2ZEP. Good morning, Dumper.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Okie doke. You on the Meadowbrook yet?
Nope, not yet. Be there in 2 minutes.
I'll keep your eyes open. I'm not on the Meadowbrook yet, but I'm hearing lots of sirens, emergency vehicles, and I don't see any. It makes me feel it may be on the Meadowbrook.
I'll have my, see if there's anything on the satellite radio indicating as such, and I'll scan up on the radio and see if there's any police activity.
Okay, can you do that and stay on this frequency at the same time, or are you going to be QSYing for a minute?
I said I'd be QSY, but I'm going to listen on the ambulance band and see if there's any activity out there. But, because the police are on this side of the band, but I just realized something speaking with you, because I redid this radio. I redid the program in it, and I just realized like there's no way to work around that and not even move. But I'll have to remember to do that tonight. Set up the band, the frequencies differently, so I don't have to move at all.
Which radio are you working with?
The 8800.
In that case, you could always do what I did. I have everything on the left and the right side identical, except for which frequencies have the alphanumerics.
Well, as soon as you made everything, I did the 440 on the right and the 2 meters on the left.
Well, what I have is I have all the frequencies duplicated left and right side, but I put the tags on 2 meter left, 440 right. So we're similar in that effect.
I have the software. I assume you have the software, so it just did an update on the software for the radio, which I had downloaded the other day, and that's when I decided, let me add some more frequencies in. I'm on the Meadowbrook, so far so good, so I'll let you know if there's any red lights I'm coming up to, but so far there is, it's moving here. Yep. So, you can actually, I think, on the left and the right side, the hyper activity frequencies or hyperactive memory, I should say. I think you can get it in there. So I have to look at that, because I was reading it a little bit about how you can utilize that as well.
Yeah, you've got 6 hyperterm buttons, and you can program those 6 buttons to have any set of left and right that you want.
Well, yeah, so in other words, if you want to hear, you can put like all your police bands together on, let's say, number 1. Number 2, you can do whatever, and number 3, you can do whatever. So, but it doesn't eliminate it from the memory. It's just if you want to hear something real quick.
Now, you're not going to get all your police bands, because what will happen is you hit, let's say, hyperterm 1, you've got preset. I have it preset to line mark 2 meter on the left and 440 on the right. It'll only give you one pair of frequencies. And then you hit the next hyperterm, it'll go to the next pair of frequencies.
Oh, I gotcha. I thought you could put like a whole, you could stack it. I guess not.
The only way you could stack it is if you purposely put in the memory slots the, let's say, the police bands, put them one right after the other, and this way when you scan, you'll scan those police bands together.
Well, last time I had the radio set up, I have an amateur one through whatever, and I did a separation from like 200 to 300, let's say, whatever, of all the police frequencies. And above that I have, which I locked out, but if you do tune it manually, I have a NOAA radio. Because every time it was scanned, I didn't have it locked out, so that always stopped at that, and that was annoying. So, and I did the same. I did the same way on the right hand side as well.
Yep, yep. By the way, the Meadowbrook is fine. I'm just transferring over to the northern state. I don't know where those sirens were.
So you're ahead of me. I'm already by, Old Country Road here. And everything is moving along here. Not a problem.
We seem to be the only ones up this early today.
Somebody did wake up. I heard them.
You're not the only ones up this early. Good morning. This is N2, EB.
I knew that comment would bring someone out of the woodwork. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi.
Yep, I'm just getting out to the northern state from the Meadowbrook. Rough night last night. Anyway, but Monday morning, so the other Good Morning John station, over to you. N2EB.
The other Good Morning is now being microphone shy. Vinny?
Yeah, I guess he left. And this is the K82NCD mobile on the four liner. And, yep. So, just a lot of people on vacation this week. Just will be on vacation out of the September.
All right. Not at all, state. And, that's that. I guess I'm right in between you two guys. Slightly ahead of Vinny and I'm Gary. Gary, over to you. And two, EB.
Yeah, I just passed Willis Avenue, but the way John usually drives, he should be passing me soon. And I am going slightly above the posted limit. Vinny? And she's Eddie P here.
Yes, I'm going slightly full steam ahead. And I guess John is in the middle of us, which is okay. Well, convoy here. CB convoy. Anyway, it's moving right along here, John.
Oh, really? I think I'm ahead of all of you. See, I just passed Shelter Rock, traveling, and just keeping up with the traffic. And I'm coming up to New Wine Park Road already. I guess I got that wrong. Anyway, so what's with the hyperterms and all that? And what radio is this? Is this the Jesu? Gary?
Yeah, Vinny and I have the Yaesu dual bander. Unlike the ICOM, it's got, at least the ICOM model that you have, it's got twin receive. It's not just dual band, it's dual receive. And as a result, you can also set up quick memory presets. You can select two at a time stations left and right, and just by hitting one button switch to those stations, that combination. Vinny?
Yeah, so we're discussing how you can manipulate that to do that, but I thought you could put a whole bank of stations on one memory, but you can't, so we'll have to look at that and go into the software and see how I can do that. Now, so that means on the left side, I could also, I'm a little confused. On the left side, I can actually operate both bands, is what you're saying. I don't have to have a split the way I do. So if that's the case, then I can take everything that's on the one side and move it to the other side. So amateurs on one side and all my receivers on the right side. I guess that's how I can do that as well. John?
All right. And that's a, I bet you it even has, what, cross-band repeater. Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at that. But, like I said, I was looking at the A2, but also, like, you know, after eyeing it for about a month, it started to creep up. Like, every month it was like just another $10 more until it got up to where the icon was. Believe it or not, the icon is more expensive. So I said, well, if that's the case, I'm getting the icon. Gary, over to you.
Yes, but I'm trying to remember. I think you just got the newer version of the ICOM that we both had. You ended up spending the same money for less features. Vinny, what I did, and I think I said this before, I have both the left and right sides pre-programmed identically. So if I go to memory slot 1 on the left, I've got line mark 2 meters, and if I go to memory slot 1 on the right, I got line mark 2 meters. But the difference is, on the left side, since 2 meters is what I primarily use on the left side, I actually put in the alphanumeric line mark, where on the right side, I have not put it in, so I just see the frequency numbers. So this way, if I want to monitor two amateur radio stations simultaneously, I can put one on the left, one on the right. If I wanted to listen to a, let's say, the ambulance band that you were talking about, I could put that on the right while I have line mark on the left. Any combination I want. Vinny?
Well, you can also, of course, you can show the... If you don't lock it on, I think I locked it out because I'm seeing the new, I'm not showing the frequency here. I just have this line mark. But if you press the one button there, it'll change it from numeric to alphanumeric. And so you can also do that. So if I want to see what frequency is, if I hit the last button on the right-hand side, you hold that there for about a second, the frequency will come up, and then the name will come off. John?
Wow, those are features I'm looking for. You guys spend a lot of money for stuff that you don't use. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This is what I want. Anyway, I think I know where my frequencies are, whether it be numeric or alpha. And mostly everything alpha, and then I figure what the frequency it is. We go a little chart. I started to do that, and then I kind of like lost track. Especially with Limon, since they took off the PL tones and all that stuff. Gary, over to you.
Okie doke. Enough radio talk. This is amateur radio. We're not supposed to be talking radios. So what you guys do this weekend, Vinny?
I actually did a brake job, and so far I'm able to stop, so I guess I did okay. John?
Well, went to a nice little restaurant on Saturday night, and on Sunday, mostly visiting friends and relatives and all that, mostly relatives, and out in Levittown, and then out in Dix Hill. That's what we're about. And, was it Friday? No, it was Saturday. On Saturday, it was always also at the beach, and it was nice. A nice, relaxing weekend, I should say. Gary?